No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this Wednesday edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. I am Terry Cushman, coming to you from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. You can find me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining us tonight from the city of Providence, Rhode Island, Charlie Smith. Charlie?
As always, a huge pleasure. It almost feels like we're winning or something because we're doing this every single day, it feels like. But it's been an eventful last couple of days, and I'll let you explain why. And it's been good. For those that want to send me some love or hate or anything in between, Smith_MLB is where you can find me on Twitter.
Very good. So normally the Hot Take Tuesday episode would have been released today, but as you guys know, we were kind of, you know, on the hunt for a new co-host, and there was a lengthy process involved with that, but we finally have reached the end of it. So joining us tonight will be the newest member of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We'll be joining one of the rotations. We don't know if it's the early week or the midweek yet, but it will be a permanent spot on one of those rotations. And he is Cody Paulson. Cody, how are you?
Hey, everybody. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Good, good. So, a month ago, did you ever expect you would be in the seat on, I don't want to say a top Red Sox podcast, but a pretty well-known Red Sox podcast in the market. Did you envision that this might be happening soon?
To be honest, no. I can't say that I did, right? It's obviously a dream come true for anybody that loves the Sox to be able to hop into the audio space, create content with some, you know, good guys that have great points and just talk shop. This is, you know, you do this with your buddies when you're palling around, when you're watching the game, and to be able to create content, interact with subscribers of the show is just super exciting.
Yeah, and for the audience, I usually don't thump my chest about our metrics over the course of a season, but since the season is over, I mean, it was a pretty successful one for us, despite the lack of success for the Red Sox. Our audience peaked at about 10,000 listeners a month, and that generated about 27,000 downloads, so definitely a higher peak. I've been saying all week, if Heim Bloom didn't suck at his job this year, you know, our metrics would probably be way higher than that. So, but it's been fun interacting with everyone. And as lame as the last probably 6 or 8 weeks have been, it is going to get a lot more exciting coming up as transactions and roster decisions get made, hopefully some extensions with some key players. So there'll be plenty to talk about through the Christmas season anyway. And we got some playoffs coming up as well. So still my favorite time of the year. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I love MLB playoffs. And it doesn't seem to matter if we're in. I mean, it does matter, but the 2016 postseason, even though we got tossed so early, one of my favorites of all time. Cubs, Indians at the time. And so hopefully we got some juggernauts this year going in. You know, Dodgers, Mets, Braves are actually only two games behind the Mets right now. And then you got the Astros on the other side, and of course the evil empire. But yeah, big month. So all right. So Cody, we want to get you acquainted with the audience. And actually, before we get into the tough questions, and I'm being a little facetious with that, where are you from? What's your life story, kind of in a nutshell?
Yeah, I grew up just outside of Jacksonville, Florida, a small town called Ponte Vedra Beach. Went to school at Florida State University, got a degree in sports psychology. I pursued that for a little while. Didn't work out the way that I would have hoped. So I went back to school for a master's degree in data analytics. And that brought me out to Houston, Texas to work for a consulting company, Capgemini.
All right. And you're not native to Boston. So what led you to the Red Sox?
Yeah, that's a great question. Growing up when I did, I was born in 1991, a little bit of a nomad in terms of baseball fandom, and in the outskirts of Jacksonville, Marlins and Rays, either weren't existing or, were just getting their feet wet. So, travel baseball teams back then, they like to emulate, kind of the teams that you see in the MLB, right? So our first travel team, they gave us, a Red Sox cap or, some Little League equivalent of it, but we were essentially the Red Sox, and I didn't have a team. I was looking for a home. Loved the cap, fit great. And you started watching guys like Nomar and Mo Vaughn and Pedro, and it's hard not to fall in love with a team like that. And it's kind of stuck for me. And rain or shine, I'm going to watch the team. I'm going to try to watch as many of the 162 as I can. And as you've mentioned, about this season, right? A lot more rain than shine, but I can't seem to quit them.
Being in Houston, is there ever any animosity or patty cakes that happens, with that fan base? Because you must have some Sox gear that you wear around.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't say there's necessarily animosity outside of 2018. They've kind of had our number. You mentioned, that 2016 postseason, they kind of got us up out of there pretty swiftly. But I do like to needle them a little bit about, the whole, 2017 situation. So that makes for some interesting conversations to say the least, but it's all in good fun, all in jest. I mean, really at the end of the day, what does it really matter if I tell somebody, I think his team did something shady, right? Like we have no control over the overall outcome of that scenario.
I love talking to fans that have hats that are out of market, but I find most of the time they have no clue what I'm talking about. Like they don't even know their own team. They're like, oh man, that's why I shouldn't talk to strangers. But anyway, so we got some questions for you. We want the audience to be able to size you up and get to know you a little bit. So Charlie has a couple more than me. I'm going to try to sneak one more onto my list here, but go ahead. This is kind of going to be like the roast the host format that we did last winter. So if you're familiar with that, Cody is on the hot seat. Go ahead, Charlie.
All right, Cody. Well, first and foremost, welcome to the crew. It's an absolute pleasure getting to know you, hearing a little bit more about your story, and then also getting to see you get grilled with questions you were not prepared for. And that's awesome. Like you did a great job. So welcome. First question, just like earlier, you're not prepared. You don't know what's coming. Favorite video game of all time?
Ooh. Does it have to be baseball or just overall video game?
Overall.
Oh, no, video game.
Okay. Overall video game. I was a big fan of Super Smash Brothers, the original on the N64. Played that all the time with my buddies growing up. We kind of created our own game where you had to do random characters, and you're always, you know, rotating the controllers too. So it was never the same, you know, matchups, never the same teams, never the same opponents. But if we're going to talk about baseball, I have to give a shout out to MLB 05 with Manny Ramirez on the cover. That's got to be hands down the best baseball game in all the land, in my opinion.
Wow. Okay. I know for me growing up, N64 was the way. Did you play Nintendo, Terry, or no?
Well, my system was the Super Nintendo, so one before Killer. That. And like Mario Kart was, I spent most of my childhood playing that game.
Yeah. For me, the first video game I ever got was Star Fox 64, and I thought it was absolutely legendary. It came with the controller with the rumble pack, and I was like, all right, this thing is bitching. Awesome. Let's see how this goes. My favorite, I'm trying to think of, so I never got into Super Smash. I had a lot of friends that got into it, but I never got into it. As far as favorite baseball game, because there was one for Nintendo 64, had one of my favorite baseball players on it, Ken Griffey Jr. It's Major League Baseball featuring Ken Griffey Jr., the original one that came out in 97 when baseball starts up and he says, call me, Junior. I love that game. But there are some ways to fix it where you can completely fool the computer. There are some gaffes in it that I've found out because I played hours and hours and hours. I made Tim Wakefield strike out 400 guys in one season. It was incredible. But that's the first question. So we're going with Super Smash and then 05 Major League Baseball with Manny on the cover. Terry, what's your first question?
Well, let's start off easy. So what is your favorite movie franchise to binge watch in a day? So like Lord of the Rings, Fast and the Furious, like which one are you picking to binge on?
I guess it would be, does the Marvel Cinematic Universe count, or is that kind of too big of a franchise?
That's fine.
Yeah. I've always, you know, had an eye towards a superhero fantasy realm. It's kind of the one that stuck with me the most. I wasn't a big Lord of the Rings guy growing up. Harry Potter was obviously huge. But once we, you know, got the production quality that the MCU was able to put forth, you know, the attention to detail, the little like end sequences and how they're able to fold in Easter eggs for future movies. I just thought it was all really, really well done. You can kind of figure out which movie you kind of want to watch. Do you want to, you know, laugh a little bit more? Or you want something a little bit more serious? Do you want something that moves the plot line? I think it just offers so much across the board. Obviously having 25 plus movies now, it's pretty easy to figure out something to watch there.
Very good. Mine would be The Bourne movies. I'm a big Matt Damon guy, and I don't know.
They were good, though. They were just on a couple days ago, and Bourne Identity was on. It's one of those movies. It's like Armageddon. When it's on, you can't not watch, and you can't, like, just turn it off. You always have to. It's like, you know what's happening, but you got to see what's happening. It's like mm-hmm. that.
What about you, Charlie?
Favorite what?
Movie franchise?
Yeah.
Oh, Fast and the Furious, hands down. Oh, my God. Anything fast. Yeah. Oh, my God. I love going. Yeah, please. That's foreshadowing. So, next question. Worst speeding ticket?
Oh, when I was in college, I've actually only gotten one speeding ticket. So, I guess this has to be the worst. It was a bad one. We'll say bad in the sense that I will fight on the hill that I don't deserve the speeding ticket. But anyways, I was going down the hill coming on Tennessee Street in Tallahassee, and a bus passes me and a motorcycle cop clicks me and tells me that I'm doing 15 over in like a school zone that had construction. It was 25 miles an hour. And I was like, my guy, there's no way I'm doing 40, 45 in here. This bus is ripping along down the hill. Like, I got to go teach a tennis clinic. I'm doing everything I can under the sun to try to get out of this ticket, because I wasn't even speeding, right? I had all the time in the world to get to where I needed to go. But yeah, they tagged me, I think for three bills, and I had to do driver school and everything. It was a mess.
300. Wow. Terry, yeah. What's yours? Can you top that?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I can top that one. Mine happened actually in Massachusetts. And I was doing, I think it was on 495 somewhere near Lowell, and I got clocked doing 94 and a 65. Yeah.
Ouch.
Wow.
Yeah, and it, I know that sounds bad, and this is going to sound even dumber, but it's true. We were going to Charlie. I got your keyboard going. I was going to a cribbage tournament. That's like my nerdy hobby. I've mentioned that a few times on the show. Petey and Tito used to play it every day, apparently, in the clubhouse. But anyway, so it was like 6 a.m. My friends like to stay up all night playing poker. I don't. I'm the designated sleeper, so I was driving. It was his vehicle. Nissan Altima, very wide, low to the ground, not like my Jeep Wrangler. And all alone out there at 6 a.m., and I just wasn't paying attention. And the Altima's so low to the ground, stable, and the cop, he said he was following me for like, I think it was 2 or 3 miles, and then he's like screaming at me when he got to the door. And I know it's not good to be, you know, an a-hole to a cop. You're not going to get anywhere with that. And that wasn't my strategy, but he still rung me up pretty good. The only thing, though, is he dropped my fine. Apparently in Massachusetts, the state trooper sets your fine. There's a minimum and a maximum. Maybe that's everywhere. I don't know. My only other speeding ticket was in 2003, but he put all my fines down at the state minimum, and it was just one fine for $105. So I got pretty lucky. I might have had the high score for the day on the Mass Pike there. But
boy, you set it early too.
6 a.m. I set the tone for the rest of the day, you know, set the bar high.
I do feel like with Altimas, you find yourself going like at least 10 miles an hour faster than you think you're going.
Yeah, I mean, I knew I was speeding when I saw the blues. I thought he was going to tell me I was doing like 82 or 84. It was add exactly 10 to that, and that's what I was doing. Yeah. Charlie's got a bad one. Charlie is actually going to take the cake here in just a second.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to take it. I'm going to steal it, and you're never going to see it again. In fact, I can guarantee it that I probably stole two cakes, and you won't see that one either. This was actually 2020 on 12/24. I'll give you a moment to think about what day of the year that is. And I got hit for a 103 and a 55 at 7:08 in the morning. And the cop, who was a complete dick, asked me if I knew what the speed limit was, and I said 65. He goes, try 55. And I go, oh, okay, my bad, I'm sorry. He goes, do you know how fast you're going? I said, no, I was cruise controlling. I was going 85. And he goes, yeah, you're going over 100. You almost blew the doors off my squad car. I said, I don't think I'd be blowing your doors off, sir. No disrespect. It's raining and it's 7 o'clock in the morning and it's Christmas Eve. Do you think I'm trying to get to work right now? Really? So he slapped me with a $485 ticket that I tried to fight and it didn't get contested. I contested it and it didn't go anywhere. I was told after the fact, if I went to court, it would have gotten thrown out because apparently like that's what happens in court. But $485, I still have the picture of it. I still have the, actually, you know what? I think I have the paperwork for it in my room because I don't think I'll ever get another one like that again. But I've been pulled over 50 times in my life and I've only had two tickets. And what I used to do is record myself getting out of the tickets. I got pulled over twice in the span of 12 hours when I was driving cross country from Rhode Island to California. So I've done the cross country thing 5 times. I've lived in multiple places depending on work, wherever it takes me, that's where I go. And in this particular circumstance, I got pulled over coming out of, I was going through, I think it was the Herbert Hoover Tunnel in Colorado. And when you're going in, it's 40. When you're coming out, it's 25. So for those that are out-of-staters, they don't know. So a cop hit me going 45 in a 25. So I got pulled over. So I originally pulled over. I had the car for 4 days. This car literally had 2,000 miles on it. It was brand new. And he pulls me over, and he goes, do you have your license and your registration? I go, I know I have it. This is a new car. Like, I just got it. He goes, I know you don't. All right, you don't have your registration or your license on you. That's fine. I can run the plates. Clearly, you have insurance if you're driving a car like this. And I was driving a brand new Mazda Miata, like decked out. I just like, you know, when I worked in entertainment full time, that's what I blew my money on, was like a really nice car, which I ended up totaling. 12 hours later, 12 hours later, I got pulled over in Nebraska. Oh, it was Nebraska first. And then I got pulled over in Colorado. And I just recorded the videos. I said, damn, I got pulled over again. Watch me get out of this ticket. And I did. So maybe it was God punishing me, and that's why I got a 485 spot. But on Christmas Eve, douchiest cop of all time, definitely not going to be beat by anybody else. They said that I had excessive speeding, reckless driving, and like all this other stuff. They should have cut my license in half, towed my car, and arrested me, and I didn't get any of that. And that apparently was my get-out-of-jail-free card because I didn't get any points on my license or anything like that. So anybody who knows me knows I like talking. That's pretty incredible, right? But
you got to Uber when you're in Colorado, though. Just like moving forward, you got to stop driving in Colorado.
Yeah, it's really pretty in Colorado. Like it's really nice, and there are a lot of states that I took a different trip every single time when I was doing the cross country thing. And a lot of states, there's really not much but like corn. There's nothing but bullshit and corn. Excuse my language. That's kind of it. Nothing against them. Colorado is absolutely breathtakingly gorgeous. I will always try to go through Colorado. Exactly. So I know the show is about you. I'm going to stop talking. Terry, I'm going to hand it back to you, sir. And you have the next question.
No, we got to get that story in there. That's insane.
I just want to add one super quick thing. State troopers are automatic tickets, I feel like. They're the only ones that have ever written me up. Because I've gotten tons of warnings, like Charlie, from local and county. But, yeah. All right. So... I got one more movie related one, so sticking with that. What is your favorite Boston themed movie, if you have one?
Ooh, Boston themed movie. Man. Yeah, this is probably not going to be like the most popular. I thoroughly enjoyed Fever Pitch. I think Jimmy Fallon's underrated funny in that. He's just kind of quirky. I didn't like it at all when I first saw it, and I've kind of gone back and rewatched it as an adult, and I'm getting some of the jokes that just went way over my head as a kid. obviously, you fold in the great run that they had during, the filming of that and the cutscenes there at the end of it. But we'll go Fever Pitch.
And that can be any Boston. It doesn't have to be sports. It can be any Boston.
Correct. Movie. Yeah. I mean, the town is also Boston. That's right. A good
one. It's whatever you want. Because I know what mine is.
Well, what do you got there? Well, I'll stick with Fever Pitch.
Terry, who do you have for your favorite Boston movie?
Mine happens to be my favorite of all time, actually, and it's The Departed, which had Matt Damon again, Leonardo DiCaprio. But really what made that movie epic more than anything was Jack Nicholson. And, I just like
it. Are you listening to me?
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you guys. I panicked. I put that one in New York in my brain because I had that one up, right? It's got one of the greatest quotable lines in movie
which
history.
Which one? Go ahead.
With the cranberry juice in the bar, man.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Right? It's so good. It's such a great movie, but I was like, oh, Wahlberg, it could be, but it might not be. I don't want to say it is and then it isn't. Oh.
My favorite line from that movie is, he goes, I think you better call your mother and tell her you won't be home for supper, which means a raid is coming. And I'll text that to my friends, if we got like the bases loaded against the Yankees, I'll be like, you better tell your mother you won't be home for supper. And the Red Sox hopefully clear the bases, but yeah.
So I have a hybrid. So I have two Boston movies. The Departed is one. I like that over The Town. Nothing against it because they do some crazy stuff with the cathedral. But I just can't imagine mugging Fenway Park. That just seems that's sacrilegious. It's actually a hybrid of Good Will Hunting and The Departed. I love Robin Williams. I will always love Robin Williams. I don't care what people say about what was going on with him towards the end. One of the best actors of all time. I will always support that man. I will always support any film that he was in. So Good Will Hunting, if anyone has not seen it, you've got to see it. But The Departed is good. Fever Pitch is good. Not bad choices.
No love for Ted here, huh?
That was a good one. It's up there. I think it's up there, but...
Oh, I don't know. Ted over The Departed?
Oh, well, no.
I'm just saying, like...
It's in my top three or four. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's different. All right.
It's just coming back to me how many movies are actually in Boston. Like, you put me on the spot. I blanked.
Yeah. No, you're good. You're good. All right. So, favorite beer or cider?
Ooh. Okay. So, we have this brewery out here. I want to say it's in Texas. It's called the Manhattan Project, and they've got an IPA that is absolutely delightful. It's a more citrus based one, as opposed to, hazy or floral forward, really great on a hot day. And, you know, we all know it gets really warm here in Houston. So that one just takes the edge off, tremendously. I would have to go with that.
Wasn't the original, Manhattan Project, that was like one of the atom bombs, wasn't it?
Correct. Yeah, yeah, out in Arizona, and then eventually, obviously, overseas. What about you guys?
I'm a history geek. Down East, hard cider for me. You know, I'm a big cider guy. So that's local to New England, and I miss it. Don't have it down here. You get the stupid ones like Angry Orchard, and I think that's about all they have down here. But
yeah, Downies, those are good. They just came out with a... It came out with a, it's like a 6-pack or 4-pack, excuse me, and it's 2 and 2, or you can get an 8. You just buy like 2 4s. You can mix and match them, but they come out with 4 or 5 different flavors on them too. It's like the 2 of each or 1 of each. It's actually really, really good. Mine's actually Ace's Pineapple Cider.
Oh,
so most people have not actually had that. And I thought, my God, cider sounds so dumb. These fruity cider things, I don't know if I'm going to like it. And the waitress came up and she said, I'm going to bring a taster for 4 of them, and then you tell me which one you want. And I said, I might actually get a beer. She goes, honey, when you taste these, you're only going to have ciders from now on. She wasn't wrong. And I've just been a cider man ever since. Like, I don't remember the last time I had a beer. I really can't remember. It's either a mixed drink or it's one of those. So, Terry, remind me. I'll just send you some Downies. I didn't know it was that.
Oh,
that
well, hard. Family brings it down, though, when they come down. Yeah, she called you honey, though?
She said, honey, yeah.
I was delivering to some of our customers yesterday. I work for a battery distributor, and the co-owner of the place called me Baby Doll. And this is in North Carolina, by the way, like way out in the, you know, middle of nowhere. So yeah, that's what I got called. But yeah,
nice.
So I you mentioned the pineapple. I gotta throw it out there. I'm officially turning in my man card with this, but Mike's pineapple lemonade, oh my goodness, man, that stuff's dangerous.
That's it. You just did it. You put it out there. Terry.
I like that. It's fruity and it's girly, but whatever. Yeah, who's up?
All right.
Oh, I'm
all right. It is you now.
All right, here's a good one. And Cody, you got to go all the way with this one because you got to maintain, you know, credibility with the audience. So, growing up, which one of your two parents was the most psycho?
Oh man! All right. Well, sorry, Mom. Yeah, it was absolutely my mother. She, you know, part Taiwanese, part Norwegian and Irish, and she brought in the Asian influence. So a little bit of a tiger mom situation kind of growing up, you know, very strict, had homework, you know, I'm just going to go and preface this again. I'm sorry, Mom. But yeah, she definitely didn't quite understand my lack of focus growing up. So we had our fair share of squabbles over that. And I'm pretty sure I pushed all of her buttons. So a lot of it's on me, but she was the one that would flip a little bit more than my dad, that's for sure.
So she was strict on like grades and all that, I assume?
Yeah, grades, you know, behavior, making sure that I'm not, you know, acting a fool out in public. You know, you name it, I'm sure we probably covered it.
I noticed just from, you know, friends and whatnot, like a lot of, you know, people from Asian cultures are like grades are just extremely strict, you know, and parents are tough on their kids from what I understand.
Mean, no. And you know, it obviously comes from a great place, right? They want the best for us. And the path to success is largely academics. You know, all growing up for me has really been, it's just realizing that my parents are right the entire time. So that's, you know, a lot of fun. But Yeah, I mean, she was on me for my grades, and you know, I'm grateful for that. It instilled a good work ethic. I would like to believe, at least. So you know, hopefully, we're just here making her proud.
Yeah, my mother as well was the most psycho, and I was a mouthy kid growing up and had problems with authority. And when she wouldn't just like hit us once, she would do like the windmill on us, and we'd get hit like four times in 20 seconds. You know, you wouldn't know which way is up and down. And yeah, well, I grew up in a good family. That was you know, 90s when the type of, you know, punishment was okay. But yeah, so a couple of my brothers, you know, challenging too, but we had a great childhood anyway. I wish my mother, she's still around, but she would laugh her ass off if she just heard me go through that. But
that's,
yeah,
that's the hope, right?
Yeah, Charlie's parents a little less psycho.
Oh, do tell.
Well, I'll say this much. I think my mom is, you know, she did not grow up in the United States. So she's also, you know, I'm guessing, Cody, your mom's not from, she wasn't born here in the U.S.?
No, she was born in Taiwan, correct.
She was born in Taiwan. So my mom was born in Portugal and then moved to Brazil when she was a couple months old in the United States when she was 17. So we speak multiple languages in this house, which is awesome. It's opened up a lot of doors, and I always get the, whoa, you're Brazilian. You don't look Portuguese. You don't look that, which is always interesting because what does a Brazilian or a Portuguese person look like? It's really awkward. But my mom was super, super, strict. We never saw drugs, drinking. It was like Buddha. My parents mm-hmm. never put us in a situation where we ever saw anything toxic. It just wasn't around. I remember the first time I saw drugs, I was like, what is happening in the world? First time I saw somebody drunk, I remember like, what, again, like, what is this? My parents were very, very protective because my mom wanted to make sure that we were, you know, going to grow up good kids, and we made mistakes, but for the most part, under her eye, under her watch, we never messed up. We never, never messed up. My dad could be like, screw you. I'd be like, you screw you, man. And we're like totally cool, but it's just playful. If my mom just looks at me and she were to go, Charlie, that's it. Like my mom,
you know, when we were little,
counting to three. Oh, you know, you knew before she had to say it.
Correct.
She would count to three. I never heard my mom say three. Nah. My dad would count.
Charlie, I think you're frozen.
It's like
up.
That. Oh, so I'm with you. So, oh, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So, yeah, my mom is also pretty, pretty strict. It's all good.
Yeah. We're better for it in the long run, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So,
you're up,
that
Charlie.
Being said, next one, worst college. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
I think he's having.
Can you hear me okay? All right, perfect. So, worst college punishment or experience?
Ooh, I mean, you know, I was a psychology major at Florida State University. I don't think there's many bad college experiences on that track. I will say, my first semester.
Okay?
Yeah, Charlie never has issues, so your connection, I think, is bad. Is what you're
sorry about that.
Dealing with, but
it's making me think that it's me, right? Whenever there's internet issues, you always look inward, or at least I do.
No, his camera looks drunk, you know, so it's like in slow-mo. And it started, ironically, I think, on the beer question.
Too many ciders, right? Yeah, so I didn't necessarily have that many bad experiences in college. You know, everybody's been towed, parked in a place you shouldn't have been parked, or, you know, didn't know that, you know, an apartment complex had visitor parking or whatever. But my first semester in college, I was in this philosophy class, and they made us do essays as part of the assignments. And you know, it was one of those things. You know, I wrote an essay. It was very similar to another person's essay in the room, and the professor was adamant that one of us plagiarized the other, or one of us wrote the paper for the other. Didn't let us get a word in edgewise, didn't let us like talk to her about it, gave us zeros, and like wanted to take us to the dean for like academic probation. And this was like my second assignment in college. So that was a pretty harrowing kind of start to my collegiate career, academically at least, right? And, like, I just wrote like my second college paper ever, right? Like, I had no idea what I was doing. I was trying to get through this philosophy class, and you know, kept my nose clean, obviously, and had no issues. Went on to graduate with no problems. It never came up again. But that was certainly a strange experience. What about you guys?
I was in the criminal justice program only in a community college. So I guess I didn't really, nothing really happened in college.
And to be clear, I did not do anything illegal or egregious. Like, I just wrote my paper.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I probably did something.
Way to be so badass.
Right. Yeah. Me.
Oh, no. I 100% did. So I was such a problem person. My God, I've done so many bad things. So for me, this is actually something I'm very open about because I've talked about it with some of my former students, and as a former teacher, it's important to help mold and be like a responsible person. But people have asked, like, oh, did you ever drink before you were 21? Yes, I did. What's the worst you got? I went to the hospital. Really? Yeah. So how bad did you get? And I said, well, this is the way the story goes. My friend and I, we're going shot for shot at a college party, and I had just gotten into a really bad fight with my ex-girlfriend, and I said, you know what, we'll start drinking, and we're going shot for shot. Now, mind you, I'm like 120 pounds soaking wet in college. I'm a little dude, right? And my friend at the time was a former, like, lineman. So there you see is. This little white 120 pound dude, and then black 280, and we were like mad tight. Matt, he's like, "Yo, Prof, come on, let's go get some beers in you. We need to make you forget about tonight." Da da da. Super supportive and everything. We didn't have any beers. All we had was liquor. So we're going shot for shot. Oh man, I'm done. I'm like, "No man, don't be a bitch. Come on, let's keep going." Double. I woke up in a hospital, and that was it. So when I last counted, I was at 14 shots.
Oh boy. So, and I can't imagine you guys spread those out over any responsible period of time.
Less than an hour. Of course. Half. Yeah. And when they ran my or actually did the blood alcohol content level, I was at 0.323.
Ooh.
So I was in really rough shape. And at the hospital there were some extracurriculars that were taking place, and they had to do one of those extracurriculars a second time because I decided in my infinite wisdom and drunkenness to remove it. So that was dumb. All right. That is my worst college experience. I'm very frank and very open and honest. But the good thing about that was that none of my family members that were younger than me ever went through that again, because they learned from my experience. It was awesome. It was great. But getting drunk into oblivion, my worst college experience.
All right, this could be a fun one. Who will get divorced first, Harry and Meghan or J-Lo and Ben?
It's got to be J-Lo and Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck, right?
Correct.
Okay, yeah, versus Harry and Meghan, like the royal family?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I feel like Harry at this point has stuck his neck out too much for that relationship to just, like, one day be up and, like, oh, yeah, no, I'm good. So, really, I guess it puts the ball in Meghan's court if she decides that she's sick of it, where, you know, Ben and J-Lo, I mean, they've been on again, off again for however many times.
Yeah. Yeah. This is at least their second go-around. I think they were engaged once, tied the knot this time.
Yeah. I'll pick J-Lo and Ben.
All right.
I think that's a safe bet. I mean, I can't imagine a member or former member of royalty getting a divorce. I just can't do it. Not now. Not after we lost the queen. No way. That would just be, no.
I agree with you guys.
Just folded that one in.
I agree with you guys, but I'm definitely rooting for Harry and Meghan. I just think it would be epic, and I love chaos, so.
I love that you love chaos. I love it. All right, cool. So, Cody, this is a two-parter. Ready? What was your favorite candy growing up? And was that a candy that you would also eat at a movie theater?
Yeah. Favorite candy growing up. Growing up, it was Skittles because Sour Patch Kids didn't exist yet. So yeah, I would crush some Skittles if I was allowed to have them at the movie theater. Obviously, you know, they were super expensive, so it wasn't an often sought after movie delight. But yeah, I would absolutely wreck some Skittles and then just be on a sugar high and just drive, you know, my parents crazy. Or, you know, when I went by myself later, I would buy Skittles every time.
Fantastic. Terry, what was yours?
Well, mine would probably be the Three Musketeers bars, but did you guys actually buy the candy at the movie theaters, or did you go to the store first, you know, smuggle them in? Because that's what I would do. Third of the price.
There was no way that I was going to be spending like $5 for a small bag of Skittles when I could bring that box in. So,
okay, yeah, agreed.
Yeah, that just wasn't happening. That was like, Dad, can you put this in your pocket? I don't care what you have to do. Just hide it, please. Thank you. Love you. So I'll say this much. My favorite candy growing up was a hybrid between Skittles and Starbursts that I did not know were called Starbursts until I was 12, because I used to call them Strawbursts.
Oh.
I thought that's what they were called. And someone said, oh, I'm going to get some Starburst. And I said, oh, okay, cool. Is that? I wonder if that's like something similar to mine. And then I looked at the label and I said, holy crap. For years, I've been calling it the wrong thing and did not know.
But you just had to sit on that realization, right? Like you couldn't be like.
At 12, you're in sixth grade not knowing that you were saying a candy wrong the entire time. And nobody corrected you. Like, thank you. All of you are jerks. My favorite movie candy, though, was Skittles, and then Starburst got replaced by Sour Patch Kids, and I would suck on Sour Patch Kids until my tongue, like, hurt, and then I'd crush popcorn and a soda.
Popcorn and Sour Patch Kids, great combination.
Oh, huge. People put, like, chocolate, like, what are the chocolate balls that you get at the movie theaters?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
People would get the melted balls. Not Milk Duds. There was another one.
Do they have the white sprinkles on them?
Not snow caps.
Okay, yeah. That's
what. No, there's another one, and they would melt on top of the popcorn because the popcorn was obviously hot, and you'd have chocolatey popcorn. And I thought that to be just kind of dirty. I like to put cinnamon on popcorn. I think that's fun. But that's like my segue with candy. Terry, was there another question you had?
Yeah, when you were saying how you were getting it wrong the whole time, this is unrelated, but I think it's hilarious. My last apartment before I moved down here to South Carolina, I lived in it for like 7 years, and there was an old guy on the first floor, and he'd been there for like 20 years. And we introduced each other. He knew my name was Terry, but then suddenly one day he started calling me Jeff. And I'm like, oh, he's just having a senior moment. But he never came off of it. So from that day forward, I was Jeff. And my girlfriend's like, well, why don't you correct him? I'm like, I can't. I've let it go too long. I have to be Jeff at this point. And so Patrick in the basement, who we got along with until our dogs started fighting, and his was a pit bull, and he was an idiot about it. But I'm like, Patrick, I'm Jeff. If Joe asks anything, I'm Jeff. If he's talking to anything at all, it's me. I'm like, I can't correct him at this point. It's just too awkward. And I just thought, okay, early signs of dementia, probably. He's in his early 70s. It makes sense. He's just going to keep losing it. But it was just a brain fart that I could have corrected, and it would have been fine after that. But so I get the awkwardness, Charlie, of your Starburst's mishap.
At 12 years old, I didn't want to cut you off, but at 12, guys, that's sixth grade. That's bad.
That's a formative age.
That's too. A whiff.
That's a tough time to make that realization.
That's like an Aaron Judge swinging at the first slider from Brian Bayo and completely whiffing, like that bad. It was bad. Terry, what was your next one?
This is the last one I have. Kind of a fun one. If you were an MLB player walking into the batter's box, what's your walk-up song?
Ooh, Spirit in the Sky by Norman Greenbaum.
Interesting. I like that one. It's on my playlist.
I think it's got, it's obviously, I think it was referenced, The Longest Yard, right? I think they play that in that movie.
Yeah.
It's got a great beat to it, a great instrumental if you don't want to go with the lyrics, which I probably would. Plus, it probably not, at bat's not going to last that long anyway. I would have to go with Spirit in the Sky. What about you guys?
Mine would be a snippet from the Top Gun theme, with the guitar. A 20-second snippet of that. And that's what, even before the sequel came out, that's always what I've wanted it to be. Like 10 years ago, I'm like, that would be it for me. And it would be so cool, because if you hit a walk-off, they could play it longer. You know what I mean? But
absolutely.
Yeah, that would be mine.
I think mine has changed throughout the years. I know at one point, I don't know if I would want, what would I have more of, I actually don't have so much of a killer walk-up song as it's coming out of the bullpen song.
Okay.
Bullpen song would have been Adagio for Strings by DJ Tiesto. Walk-up song would have been Remember the Name by Fort Minor.
Oh, that's a good one.
Those would probably be my two. I don't know if, Terry, do you know Fort Minor or no?
I'm a classic rock and mostly country guy, so I'm
a little. That's a no.
I'm a little challenged with certain areas of pop culture.
Yep. So that's that one, and then Adagio for Strings. That's like techno. So I'm a huge techno guy, and that song is also shifted around, like coming up or out of the bullpen. There's another song by Tokyo Tears called Burning. And if you need a pump up song for when you're trying to get that like last rep in, that's the jam you want on the radio. That's the song I was listening to when I was allegedly going 100 miles an hour. I think I may have been going a little fast, but not 100 fast. That's just me. I digress. Is that me now? Are we shifting to me?
Whatever you got left.
Worst job, Cody.
I worked wait staff at a retirement home for an hourly wage. So there were 16 tables, four individuals to a table, preset meals. So that made it a little bit easier. Thankfully, I didn't have to, take orders and run that. But I had to memorize all the drink orders. Everybody sat at the same seat every day. And they got a little gnarly with the food, right? You had to know, if somebody liked peas or didn't like peas, or, wanted extra bread or, butter instead of jam or whatever that was. So I had to do that for an entire summer, before my freshman year of high school. There was a couple of guys there that were, I think in their teens, in like the 20s and 30s. So occasionally I would get to talk shop with them, talk about baseball. And so that was super cool. But that was by far probably my worst job. What about you guys?
My worst job was, it was either the summer of my junior year, or maybe it was right after high school, maybe right after graduation. I don't remember, but I was detailing cars for a friend of a friend's little private car dealership. They used to get their cars from auctions. They were never great, but I wasn't crazy about my boss, and I was even less crazy about his mom, who worked there, and she kind of did the books and the financial stuff for when people bought the cars. And it was just a disgusting job. I'm cleaning these cars that have been repoed and probably used for like drug dealing, and I didn't find anything crazy in them when I was cleaning them, but I didn't like it, and I didn't like the people, and I think I might have lasted the summer, and probably a year or two later, my boss had a bunch of OUIs. I don't think he even had his license at the time, but finally got it back, decided one night, I'm going to the bar, I'm going to snort some coke, get into a high-speed chase, and now he's dead. So, they were a shit show. The job was a shit show. And, but you didn't see that one coming.
Sure didn't.
Definitely not.
I'll wait tables, no problem.
Seriously. For me, it was the same thing, was waiting tables. I didn't mind waiting tables, but I found it to be kind of brutal when I'm busting my hind. And there were things that would kind of go awry, and somehow I'd get blamed for it, and that was ridiculous. But it was a really good experience as far as like helping me remember, as far as working in entertainment. Like when you have to remember lines, yeah, you can remember a five top. That's pretty good without having to write anything down. I used to always tell myself, if I can remember four or five meals and drinks without messing anything up, without having to write anything down, that's got to be at least a 25% tip. Like, you got this kid who's remembering five.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And if you have repeat customers asking if they wanted the same thing again, you'd think you'd get that. And it was always a downer. Like, I'd always be disappointed when I was like, how the hell did I just get 10%? Like, what the hell just happened? And then there were days where you get 40% for somebody who just whatever. Like, you didn't even go above and beyond, but they're still like, here you go. You're just a kid. Here's 40% tip, which is insane. One time that happened, I was blown away. I felt bad taking it. It didn't feel right, but that was that. Terry, do you have any other ones? Because I got a few.
Keep going, man. Keep going.
All right, man. Favorite non-Red Sox player? I already know Terry's.
Everybody knows mine.
I mean, it's easy to say somebody like Ohtani. I think O'Neill Cruz on the Pirates is hilarious and so entertaining to watch. I don't want to be his first baseman. The guy's out by like five steps. You can throw it a little bit softer. I don't need 101 with tail coming at me from short. And yeah, I mean, he puts balls in, I believe it's Allegheny River, right? Is it the Allegheny River?
What are you talking about?
The Pittsburgh, the river in Pittsburgh Stadium.
Oh, that I don't know.
He puts balls in the river on things that look like they'd be a fly out to right. And I mean, they're just bombs. The guy's so entertaining to watch.
I'm looking it up right now as we speak. PNC Park Allegheny River home runs. Yes, you are correct. Well done. Did not know that. All right, so that's a part one. And then, who is your favorite non-Red Sox player that is no longer playing?
No longer playing. I mean, you got to go Griffey, I think. Deep cut. Cargo and Colorado, I thought his swing was beautiful. The bat drop that was just natural for both of them, for that matter. Lefty swings. I would say either one of those guys.
Okay, Terry, who's your? It sucks. I hate this. But who's? Yeah, here we go. Let's get this out of the way.
I won't spend hardly any time on it. My favorite non-Red Sox player is kind of local to Cody at the moment. I've always been a big Justin Verlander guy. I just the cool factor, the swagger. I think he's the greatest pitcher of the last 20 years. Certainly. I'm not as strong with baseball history. But I got to go with him, and I'm racking my brain as far as, I'm going to give a really unpopular answer for my favorite player that's not playing anymore. I just couldn't help but love the guy, especially when it comes to grace and humility and just the epitome of a great role model, and that's Mariano Rivera. I just stole Charlie's. And one of my favorite moments was like literally right at the end of his career when Girardi brings him in with one out to go in the eighth, and he's going to only let him go two outs in the ninth. That way he gets the curtain call. You know, if the game ends, everybody starts to leave. But Girardi doesn't go out to take the ball from him. He sends out Jeter and Pettit, and it was just such an emotional moment. And then I was rooting so hard for him to be the first unanimous, you know, Hall of Fame inductee, and no stupid Tampa writer, you know, messed it up. You know, they all put him in. So I'm going with Mariano.
In my eyes, Ken Griffey Jr. and Mariano Rivera should have been the first two unanimous. It shouldn't have even been close. You know, it really shouldn't have. So for my two, so growing up as a kid, Ken Griffey Jr. was like God, more than Barry Bonds, more than Larry Walker, even like Pedro. Randy Johnson was incredible.
Johnson was fun.
Johnson was crazy. You had, you know, Trevor Hoffman, and then oh my God, I'm drawing a blank on the other left-handed reliever closer who was insane. He actually pitched for the Red Sox for like half a season. Was insane. Struck out two guys an inning.
What year was it?
Oh, it's a little far back. He was a former closer, and then he came over as like a setup guy, and I remember being super pumped because he struck everybody out. He only had like, I think he had 16 strikeouts in 8 1/3 innings. It was Hoffman was one guy, and there's another reliever at the same time. I think he played for the Braves. I'm drawing a blank on his name, but it was, you know.
It wasn't John Rocker, was it?
Nah, screw John.
Of course. Okay. I was like, we can't be talking about the same guy.
John Rocker was a head case. But, right. My favorite.
A bad racist.
Yeah. He
a lot of problems there.
Yeah, he had some dumb moments. My favorite non-Red Sox player, I think right now, is torn between Corbin Burns, because I love Corbin Burns, and Max Scherzer. I think that two eye color thing is, it's like heterochromia, or I don't know what it's called, the two colored eyes, heterochromia. I was right. All right, there we go. So that, and then as far as former, I mean, oh my God, former non-Red Sox players, it is so hard to not pick somebody like Mariano Rivera. I mean, he just every single time just made you look stupid with one pitch. With one pitch, no
That's
other
the craziest
pitcher.
Part.
He threw a cutter. That's literally it. He threw other pitches, but like, not really. You know, right. Like that. That was it. And I found that to be like absolutely insane.
I got a funny story, and this speaks to my lack of history. You know, going back, you know, beyond the 90s and whatever. With baseball. See, I think I've said this on the podcast before, this story, but just for context, you know, I grew up in a NASCAR family, so I'm coming from the weirdest avenue into a podcast ever. You know, I just come from a racing family. And, you know, my dad's kind of a big Celtics fan. I kind of caught the end of the Bird, McHale, Robert Parrish, you know, era. But anyway, so, and I'm still not super great when it comes to baseball history. If there's a documentary on, I'll probably watch it. But I was working as a bellboy at a Marriott in the Portland area. And it's probably in terms, it's not a ritzy hotel, but if you had a top five list, it's probably on it. The Portland Harbor Hotel and the Regency are probably one and two. But anyway, so I get radioed to the lobby. I wasn't up there like I should have been. And they're like, yes, this couple would like some help with their bags. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no problem. So I grab the bell cart, and the gentleman's appeared to be at least in his early 50s. The wife was probably about 10 years younger, super attractive lady. She was the chatty one, so that's the one I'm making small talk with and, you know, getting the luggage on the cart and whatever. And we get in through the lobby. And into the elevator, and as the elevator door is closing, I see my coworker at the front desk, and he's looking at me with a furious look on his face. And, you know, I'm a troublemaker sometimes, so I clearly I did something. I had no idea what I did, but so we get up to their room. I get them situated, make sure the thermostat's working, and I tell them, you know, anything you need, come find me. I know all the best bars, all the best restaurants, and anything around the hotel, I'll take care of it. So they're like, yes, okay, thank you. So I go back down to the lobby to confront my coworker. I'm like, dude, what's your problem? And when you're the bellboy, you have to wear their stupid red jacket. It was like really embarrassing. If they ever sent me out in public, like the bar manager would send me into like Hannaford to get an alcohol that they just ran out of. I'm taking that stupid jacket off. I'm not getting caught dead in a public, you know. But anyway, so I'm like, dude, what is your problem? And he grabs me by that red jacket and he's shaking me like back and forth. And he goes, do you have any idea as to who that was you just helped? And I was like, actually, no, I don't. And he said, that was Dwight Evans. Right fielder.
No way.
Right fielder for the 1986 Boston Red Sox and for the majority of the 80s. So I whiffed on that one, you know. And that was around that whole thing was like in 2009, 2010. You know, I'm obviously a little bit better now with that stuff. But like I said, baseball wasn't my first sport, and I whiffed. Super nice guy. And
I think sometimes they appreciate that, though, right? Just yes. Like somebody just like gets them along their way. They're like,
that's hey, a you know. Big whiff. That's a big whiff.
Hands up, yes. But, you know, maybe he was like, oh, I didn't have to deal with the fanfare. We got, you know, to where we needed to go. We kept it moving.
That's like helping somebody out and being like, do you know who that was? No, that was Tom Cruise. Who? Dwight Evans in your Red Sox fit. Are you what the?
I know. I'm not proud of it, but you know it happened. I'm not gonna hide it. And everyone thinks it's hilarious because I'm a dumbass. But yeah. But to Cody's point, though, I always made it a point not to be annoying. We didn't have a ton of celebrities, but Willie Nelson stayed with us once, and he stayed on his bus because he likes to, you know, do some stuff that's, you know, shouldn't be happening in hotel rooms. You know, herbal related stuff. But his sister, who was his piano player, you know, for much of his career, stayed in the hotel. I was helping her, and I kind of had to waltz past him to get to the bus. I never said anything, you know, just a quick hi, how are you. Miss America 2009, I think she was a controversial one. I can't remember why. Her name's Carrie Prejean, but she stayed with us, had to help her. Yeah, Third Eye Blind stayed with us. I'm not a big 90s, you know, alternative rock guy, but yeah, so I'm sure there's some others. Guy Fieri of the Food Network, I did help him, knew who he was, but
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he signed this thing for my mom because we were in the elevator going up to the luxury suite. And I was like, sir, I was like, I'm not going to lie to you. I said, I don't watch a ton of Food Network, but my mom does. And when I'm over there, it's like pulling teeth to get the Red Sox on because she wants to watch Food Network. And he's like, oh, well, that should always win that battle. And and then when I was getting his stuff situated, he was, unbeknownst to me, he was filling out this thing for my mom. And yeah, he had asked for her name a few minutes before, and I didn't put together that he might do something like that. But super nice guy, though. Yeah,
those are the cool stories.
Yeah, anyway,
right on. Cool. Yeah,
Charlie.
And then I don't believe we covered this one yet. Your favorite sports memory as a child, baseball or otherwise?
I'm guessing like as like a spectator.
Or on TV, I think would be fun.
Right, yeah. Growing up, my dad was a Braves fan. We didn't have like the Turner Network or anything like that, so we didn't really get to watch much baseball. I think we watched more Cubs games than anything because somehow we got WGN in Jacksonville, Florida. But we were a big tennis family. And growing up, one of my favorite players was Gustavo Kuerten out of Brazil, ironically. You know, loud colors, the yellow and the blue, crazy hair. He just played with so much flair and so much passion. So, you know, he won Roland Garros 3 times, and you could just see how much the tournament meant to him, and to be able to watch him win that. As a kid growing up playing a lot of tennis, those are some of, you know, kind of like my favorite spectator moments. I think the 07 ALCS coming back against Cleveland, you know, you kind of lived and died with every pitch in that series, going down 3-1, coming back, JD Drew, you know, kind of putting us over the top there. That would probably be a close second, if not, you know, first, definitely in baseball. One of them, baseball. Many baseball memories.
Roland Garros, that's the French Open?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Nadal, like, has a impossible record now, I would think. How many has he won? 11 or 12, maybe.
I think he's at 12 now. Yeah.
Yeah. He's up there.
This is bad. He's my favorite tennis player.
Oh, is he? Yeah.
Federer just retired. He posted something on Instagram. That's what people are doing now. Now the, like, as far as like the, this era of athletes, as far as tennis goes, Rafa Nadal is the next one. Yep. Andy Murray, is he retiring?
No, so he had a pretty significant hip injury. Right. He had some surgeries, but he's made his way back. He's in the top 50. He's still kind of plugging away. He's not the formidable big four that he used to be, but he's still out on tour grinding, getting big wins.
Yeah, he's trying. It's going to be weird when him, you know, Nadal is gone. Federer has elected to retire. Federer, actually, fun fact, I believe he has two sets of twins, which is wild and very, very rare. But always been a huge supporter of him. Then, you know, in tennis, you got Tiger Woods. When he retires, it's going to be weird. Formula One, it's going to be like when Lewis Hamilton retires. It's just going to be a weird era where we're going to be able to share stories about athletes. I'm finally starting to see what my dad was saying, like, oh, man, you miss seeing this person play back in their heyday. And I'm going to be able to do that with my kids one day when it comes to sports that they're passionate about. Like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. That guy was garbage. Or, oh, that guy was ridiculous, super funny. Or I met him in person. Who knows? Mm-hmm. So
Rafa has cool. 14 French Opens, by the way.
Oh, wow.
That's incredible.
Andy Roddick was my favorite player, and I know he wasn't. He only won, what, maybe one or two majors. Nearly beat Federer in Wimbledon late in his career.
Yeah. But 09 Wimbledon.
Yeah, his interviews, I just appreciated the candidness, and he was funny.
Great.
Yeah, I love that about him. But yeah, and my favorite sports moment was beating the Yankees in 04. There was something. I mean, obviously winning the World Series finally, but it was just so satisfying that historic, you know, 4-game. Run we had that's still never been done since, never been done before it. You know, yep. To be down 3-0, that's my favorite.
So for me, it's loaded because I am such a sports snob. I follow.
Right, it's hard to pick one, right?
I follow 5 habitually. I follow the Patriots. I follow Formula One. I follow soccer. I follow. You know, those are the three. But I'm following a lot of people and teams. And as far as sports moments, I'm thinking football, the Tom Brady return when you're down 3 touchdowns in the Super Bowl. That's one of the biggest of all time. When Team USA scored in like the first minute when Dempsey put it in the basket against, oh my God, Ghana. Because Ghana had sent us home twice, and we scored the first minute. And that was the game when Josie Altidore ended up, I'm pretty sure he pulled up, and it wasn't good. Baseball favorite moment? Everyone's going to say, like, the David Ortiz Grand Slam. Some people might now say, you know, Nate Evaldi's pitching performance. For me, my favorite baseball moment was I think it's Pedro Martinez in perfect dominant form in the All-Star game. When he did what he did, it was just remarkable. We'll never see another starting pitcher do that again. That's insane.
That was 99, right?
99. Yeah.
That was
at Fenway.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, there's shirts made about that performance.
I have one. It was insane. Yeah.
Nava's home run too after the marathon was also pretty spectacular.
Yes. Yeah.
That was as well.
My favorite like World Series call out of the four, this is never a popular one, but I really love the 2013 call when we won it at Fenway. And
that was cool.
Joe Buck screaming, you know, for the first time in 95 years. It's just like, yeah. I don't know.
Well, 07, you had Joe Buck saying, ball game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
You like that one?
I love that one.
That's
because there's nothing, you're sticking it to the Yankees again. You just got domed, like boned. You're a team in your division, your rival just got their second World Series title in 4 years, and you still haven't been to one? Granted, 2 years ago, 2 years after that, they bought it in 09, but then the Red Sox won 2 more. So in the last 23 years, you've been to one World Series. I think it's safe to say the dynasty's over.
Yeah, exactly. My favorite thing about 07 is My grandparents were big Red Sox fans, and none of them made it to 04. My grandmother that was the most passionate died in 2002, but she had Alzheimer's, so probably even if it did happen, you know, in her last few years, she wouldn't have remembered it. But with 07, I went on to ESPN after it. I saw that whole game live and everything, but then I went on to ESPN, and they had the perfect title. It said, "Twice in a Lifetime." And I just thought, man, I'm just so lucky to have seen it. And I just thought of my grandparents. I'm like, man, I wish they could have seen it. And, of course, you know, they had to live through the heartbreak of 1986. So it just, I don't know. That's probably my favorite headline of all time.
Yeah. That's a great one.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That is it, because otherwise I could just keep going, rattling off questions and coming up with other ones. Terry, I think I'm good.
Yeah, this 30 to 40 minute podcast is about to hit an hour and 10. So, but it goes quick. It goes quick.
Cody. I was going to say, it didn't feel like it.
Yeah.
Or it didn't feel like an hour and 10. It was very quick.
It's challenging to try to get them done, because I told you, you know, we like to be around 60 minutes on one show, 30 or so on the next. And, you know, it's just when you get deep into some hot topics going on, it's certainly a challenge. So we will wrap on that. Tentatively, it will still be a normal show on Sunday with the normal crew. The rest of us will be back on Thursday of next week, I think it is, October 6th. So that's definitely the date. And we're going to do our playoff predictions, round by round, World Series winners, and all that. Every host will be on for that. So it's always a fun show. More fun when the Red Sox are in it, but so be it. And we will catch you on Sunday. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.